That's hour number two of the Bible study, the Ask the Pastor Hour, 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. I'm Chuck Rathert. Wide open phone lines for you here if you want to come on board with a question or a comment for our guest today, Pastor Hank Simon, pastor at Galilee Lutheran Church in Pasadena, Maryland. He is the husband of Dr. Merryman Simon, who does the Front Porch Parenting Program for us. Here on our radio station, the busiest lady that I know. Morning, Pastor Simon. How are you?
Good morning. I'm fine, Chuck. How are you?
I'm fine. How's the weather in Pasadena, Maryland?
Well, yesterday was just gorgeous resort kind of weather. Today it's a little more humid. Sun is shining. It's supposed to get up into the mid-80s, but it's a beautiful day in God's neighborhood.
You used to pastor church in Belleville.
For 30 years.
For 30 right. years, yeah. And when you moved east, you didn't really move all that much north or south. Is your weather pretty much the same where you are now as what it was here?
Weather is a little more temperate here because I think we are a tad farther north than St. Louis. The humidity in the summer, you know, for which St. Louis is justly famous,
right.
is not quite as bad because there seems to be a breeze here. I remember somebody from the Rams came to the Ravens and was working out, and they were asking him how he was handling the Maryland humidity, and he said, "You should train in St. Louis."
Yeah.
So, but we don't get as much snow typically. The main difference is that storms can come off of the Atlantic and affect us, and periodically the remnants of hurricanes can sweep up the coast. We've not experienced that yet, but. I'm told that has happened here, so if we don't experience it, I'm okay with that.
Well, I would like to explore something here that's not necessarily all that specifically biblical or textual, but I'm just kind of curious for you as a former Midwesterner now on the East Coast, are you fairly close to the nation's capital?
Geographically, yeah.
So is it true that you have people in your congregation who work in the Washington Metroplex?
We have had people who have worked on the secure communications team for the White House. We have people who work for the National Security Agency, NSA. We have people who have jobs that they can't tell their spouses what they're doing. So yeah, we have a fair amount of people. Fort Meade is south of Baltimore, and that's where NSA is headquartered. And so we have a lot of people who either are employed directly by the government or who work as contractors or for them.
So how long have you been at Galilee Lutheran Church?
3.5 years.
3.5 years. So you were still here during the 9/11 crisis.
That's correct.
Have you been able to get a handle or a gauge on what the mentality is in Washington and surrounding parts of Washington in the wake of 9/11 when somebody flew an airliner into the Pentagon? And I guess it is suspected that the plane that went down in Pennsylvania had been turned around and was being brought back to fly into the Capitol or fly into something else. Does that remain with people where you are, or is it pretty much, for the most part, forgotten?
No, I think it's more part of the memory here than it was in the Midwest. I remember going into church that Tuesday morning, and one of the secretaries in our office had connections with Scott Air Force Base, and so we had some inkling of what was going on. Out here, D.C. is not that far away. And, in fact, New York City is a couple hours, 3 hours train ride away. So there's a connection there, too, for people. People will, there are people who will take the train up to New York if they have something they want to do and then come back the same day. It's that convenient. It's a long day, but it works. But here, with all the connection with the military and with the government, that's still on people's hearts and in their minds. We, on Memorial Day weekend, we celebrate Armed Forces Sunday, and at each of our services, we ask active duty or veteran military to come forward, and you know, tell us who they are and when they served and where they served. And at those services, typically they get a standing ovation from the congregation for their serving the country in this way.
Our numbers are 505-7850 and 1-800-730-2727. If you want to ask the pastor, I'm going to set aside my question here for a moment so we can talk to Liddell. Good morning, Liddell. You're on the Bible study.
Hi, Pastor. Hi, Chuck.
Good
morning. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. And you?
Oh, pretty good. Hi, Pastor.
Good morning, Liddell.
I have a question, but I have to say this first. When I went to Lutheran school over in Illinois, which was many years ago, we used the King James Bible. That was all we had. Now I have the NIV and the ESV, which has more understandable English words for me. But I don't understand why they don't capitalize the pronouns that refer to the triune God, like he, him, his, you, they, your. Could you help me out?
All right. You want to stay on the line or listen on the radio?
Well, I'll listen on the radio,
right.
Okay?
Thanks for the call.
Thank you.
Thanks, Liddell. I know some people like the capitalization because they think that it's showing some respect which is due to God and to Jesus by doing that, and also to the Holy Spirit. The style that is used, for instance, I think by most book publishers and probably by, for instance, the Associated Press, is to not capitalize a pronoun in reference to the deity. So that's the short answer to that. It's a matter of style.
Do you think that the increasing secularization of our country is in part responsible for that trend?
Well, I don't think so, because I saw this 40-some years ago when I was working for the daily newspaper back up in Wisconsin, back home in Appleton, and that was the style back then. I'm not sure, for instance, let me pull down my copy of Lutheran Service Book and see what they do. I know that a lot of hymnals have gone that direction, but in Luther, I just opened it up to, interesting, to 655, Lord, keep us steadfast in your word. And they retain the style of capitalizing, for instance, you, your word, your is capitalized, so they retain it. On the other hand, I'm working on my sermon for this coming week, and I'm looking at Concordia Pulpit Resources, which is the preaching magazine that CPH puts out, and I have references here to God, and they do it lowercase. And I don't think that the good editors over at Concordia Publishing House or the pastors who write the sermon study helps are you know, showing irreverence by doing that. I think it's a matter of style. And I'm guessing that the style book that is used for publishers does not capitalize the references to the deity.
All right, back to my original question here. This is taken from a story today from the Associated Press out of London. And this is on the Washington Post website. The story says President Barack Obama suggested that Iran may have some right to nuclear energy, provided it proves by the end of the year that its aspirations are peaceful. In a BBC interview broadcast Tuesday, he also restated plans to pursue direct diplomacy with Tehran to encourage it to set aside any ambitions for nuclear weapons it might harbor. Iran has insisted its nuclear program is aimed at generating electricity, but the U.S. and other Western governments accuse Tehran of seeking atomic weapons. What I do believe is that Iran has legitimate energy concerns, legitimate aspirations, Obama said, adding that the international community also has a very real interest in preventing a nuclear arms race. The story continues, but I think you get the point.
Mm-hmm.
If it is possible to commandeer American airliners and fly them into the Twin Towers and fly them into the Pentagon, then it seems to me that it is possible to deliver a nuclear weapon some way, somehow. Does any of this an announcement like this resonate with the people who live and work in and around Washington, D.C.? Does it resonate with you as a pastor, pastoring people in that area? Or is it just somewhere out in the periphery and you know, until we find out that somebody actually has a bomb that right there in Virginia, we're not going to worry about it?
I don't hear people talking about it that much. The conversations that I hear in our congregation, at least among the leaders and the people who are in the Bible classes, they are concerned about how to have a Christian witness in the society which is turning increasingly secular and even anti-Christian. I think because we've got so many veterans in the congregation, many of them have gone through warfare. And some of them who work, for instance, for NSA may know a whole lot more about this than
NSA being
the National Security Agency.
Uh-huh.
They do all the, you know, they do all the intelligence, a lot of intelligence gathering. They're one of the chief agencies that does that along with the Central Intelligence Agency, the CIA. They don't talk about their work. I know that there's concern, for instance, just as far, and we get the post at home, so that article will probably be there in the paper today. What is concern, you know, to people around here is, I think, is just nuclear proliferation in general, because North Korea has, you know, been rattling its saber, and you've got Pakistan, and the question is, how much control do they have over their nuclear devices? And when the Soviet Union broke up, you had a number of what are now independent republics that had the capacity to generate nuclear energy, and then of course you also have Iran. So I mean, this is something which problems could come up in a number of different countries. I think people that part of it is not on the forefront of their concerns. But I think some of them probably know more about it than I would like to know.
You know, we have a nuclear power plant here in Callaway County in Missouri. And I heard not too long ago that there was a proposal for another nuclear facility somewhere in Missouri. I don't know if that's going anywhere or not. But, you know, that's how we get electricity here in St. Louis. For all I know, the 5,000 watts that are coming off our broadcast tower here may be coming from Callaway County. So it's an ethical question. On the surface, I'm inclined to say, no, don't let those folks in Tehran get anywhere near nuclear capability. But then who am I to say you're going to have to deal with less electricity? You know, you're going to have to forego some things that electricity provides because we're not going to let you have nuclear power. Who am I to say that? It's an ethical question. Is it a question that is strictly secular, Pastor, or when one thinks through the answer to that question, does one invoke his Christian religion?
Well, I think you already answered your question when you said it was the ethics of it, because ethics involves applying the Christian faith to everyday life situations, and we may not use that fancy term, but we do ethical things or unethical things all the time, because the ethics is sort of the guidelines, I guess you might call them, by which we function based on our faith.
Now, I'm wondering if you're a person in the Washington structure, bureaucracy there, particularly the military complex. Here's what President Obama said, as reported by the AP here on Tuesday, June 2nd. Quote, although I don't want to put artificial timetables on that process, we do want to make sure that by the end of this year, we've actually seen a serious process move forward, and I think that we can measure whether or not the Iranians are serious. Unquote. Now, if I worked in the Washington area, I would look at a statement like that and I would say to myself, well, at the end of this year, a decision is going to have to be made. And it'll be made for political reasons, but it'll also be made for NSA reasons, for strategic reasons.
Mm-hmm.
And if it's true that the Iranians have not demonstrated that their nuclear intent is entirely peaceful and for electricity only, then it would seem the president has put himself out on the limb a little bit here as to how the United States would respond to that. Does that catch the attention of the people in Washington?
I don't hear them talking about it. I think that they're very much aware, many of them, of political talk, and sometimes you overstate things in order to make a point.
As a pastor, now you'd probably be retired by 10 years, wouldn't you?
I'd be 73. I would think so.
I don't know. I know you love the ministry. In 2009, when we're talking about nuclear power, nuclear weaponry perhaps in Iran, and missile delivery systems and nuclear capability in North Korea and on, I think it's hard to envision that you and your fellow pastors, your congregations, are not going to be dealing with some kind of very serious crisis over the next 10 years. Now, am I being a responsible thinker here, or am I fear-mongering?
I think you're probably being a responsible thinker, and what you do is you prepare as best you can and then pray that it doesn't happen. But
how do you prepare?
I think you focus on the hope that we have in Jesus Christ, and the fact that whatever happens in life, as Paul says in Romans, nothing can separate us from God's love that we have in the Savior. And then you seek to, Martin Luther was asked what he would do if he knew the world was going to end tomorrow. This is an apocryphal story. I don't know that anybody's ever proved he really said it. Supposedly he replied, "I would plant an apple tree today." So you prepare for knowing, you live each day to its fullest. In Lamentations, Jeremiah says, "Your mercies are new every morning. Great is your faithfulness." And so what each of us are given, whether we're in a hospital bed and have a terminal diagnosis, or, a grade school student who's getting ready to finish school this week, or you and me talking on the phone, God gives us this day. And so we live this day as fully as we can, as children of the Heavenly Father, as followers of Jesus Christ, seeking to share God's love and good news with the world. That probably sounds pretty simple, but maybe in a complicated world, a simple answer isn't all that bad.
Well, one of the things we like to do when we speculate about the potential, the possibilities of these things. Somewhere, somebody, you don't have to work too hard, particularly if you go to the cable television channels, somebody is going to tell you that this is the end of the world. And then they're going to engage that machinery about the Antichrist and all of those things. Not too hard to find in the bookstores or on the television. But someday, Pastor, they are going to be right. There's probably going to be somebody somewhere saying this is the end of the world, and they're going to be right.
Well, I would disagree with that, Chuck. Jesus says when the last day comes, nobody knows the time nor the hour, only the Father, not even him. He calls himself the Son of Man at that point. So I think one thing you can take to the bank is that when somebody says, for instance, there's one noted radio preacher who, if I remember right, he's saying it's May 21st, 2011. He's got a very powerful FM station in this area, and you hear him preaching about it. I think you can be sure that the world will not end on May 21st, 2011, because of what Jesus said about he himself not knowing when the end of the world was. Now, it might end the day before, or it might end the day after, but I don't think God's going to give a prophecy person like that the satisfaction of doing it on that day, besides which Jesus says it isn't.
You know, for those of us who are a little bit familiar with World War One, for example, when was the Archduke Ferdinand was assassinated in Serbia or some kind of some out-of-the-way place, and the next thing you know, the whole world is involved in the so-called war to end all wars. World War Two really was like the second half
Correct.
Of we had a halftime in there between World War I and World War II, but it was really about much of the same things.
And the seeds were sown by the peace, Versailles, that led to a lot of World War II, yeah.
So is it irresponsible for me? I'm looking at this story about what the president said about Iran. And there is reaction here from Israel. This is not what Israel wants to hear. So you could say that it exacerbates Israel's situation. Israel has already been saber-rattling about just going ahead and taking out Iran's nuclear facilities or their test facilities. If Israel does that, the Arab world responds, and the next thing, Sarajevo is back.
Yeah.
And we're, the allies are the allies, and the enemy is the enemy, and here we go again. Only this time, Pastor, we've got nuclear weapons everywhere.
Well, and there is, as I understand it, doesn't Israel have nuclear weapons, too?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and the Israelis took out, in the last couple of years, they severely damaged a nuclear reactor in Syria, as I recall, that the North Koreans had helped the Syrians build. So they've done this before, it can get very, from a human point of view, Chuck, it can get very, very scary, because if you've got a number of states that have nuclear weapons, it's not like the U.S. and Russia, the USSR back then, during the 50s and 60s, where there were sort of just a standoff because both of them were so horrified.
We're not even talking about Pakistan and India here.
Yeah. And they're right next to each other.
And they're nuclear.
And they have, and I think, the devastation of Hiroshima and Nagasaki, people don't even remember that, because for most people that, I'm 63, and that happened before I was born. So it's not etched into my memory as it is for older people. And all of this, again, points me back to that simple trust and faith in God, and doing our best, and saying this: God's still in control of this world, and that doesn't mean that we shirk our responsibilities. That doesn't mean that we don't seek to get people to act sanely and deal as wisely as we can with other nations. But this is where faith really hits the road, as far as do we really believe, or is it just something that we say, and then when things get really rough in life, we have trouble really trusting in God.
Well, I guess I'm wrestling with the responsible position here. It seems like you could just drive yourself into the ground worrying about Pakistan and India, mm-hmm. and Iran and Russia and North Korea and on, Israel. You don't gain much there. But it doesn't seem to me that it makes good sense to just say, well, Lord, if it's your will for the whole world to blow up, then bring it on.
If I was understood as saying that, that's not what I meant. But I could see where somebody might get fatalistic about it. We ask that in the Lord's Prayer, for instance, we say, "Your will be done." Having said that, God works His will as He will. But Luther says we pray that so that we can get in on the action, so that we can be part of God's will being done. Luther says we pray in this petition that His will be done among us. And so I think part of God's will is to seek to have people live in peace, not war, not nuclear, destruction.
Let me take my bottom of the arm break here, and we'll be right back.
Okay.
Here's Pastor Dave Marth of Historic Trinity, sharing his memories of KFUO.
I was a student at the seminary, which is 69 to 73. It seems like eons ago, but they would occasionally have seminary students lead a devotion as part of our training of communications to do that. And I can remember a time or two coming over to the station. I think every time there's a microphone, it's a thrill, it's a challenge. I'm always envious of you guys to be able to be so good at it as you are. But the consistency, of course, has been the proclamation of the gospel and the unwavering desire to share Jesus Christ and Him crucified. And Jesus is always lifted up. And I think God honors that, and why KFUO has been successful for 85 years, even though the proclamation has changed in the sense of the media and maybe the personalities too. You all do such a great job with your positive attitude and your excitement about the gospel that it can't help but be a blessing to lots of folks. And so I celebrate with you.
Looking for medicine in the dirtiest of places. Learn more about it on today's Creation Moment. And now, here's our Creation Moment's host, Ian Taylor.
Fungus grows in the dirt virtually all over the world. After millions of dollars of research on fungus looking for a usable drug, medical researchers were ordered to stop their research. But one scientist disobeyed orders, and the result is the most important miracle drug since the discovery of antibiotics. When Jean-François Borel, who describes himself as a mouse doctor, refused to give up research on a white fungus first identified in soil samples from above the Arctic Circle, organ transplant surgery had virtually stopped. Organs could be transplanted, but the body's rejection of the organ killed over half of all transplant patients within a year of the transplant. Dr. Borel's continuing research led to the discovery of cyclosporine, a chemical that prevents the immune system from rejecting transplanted organs. There are now over 150,000 people living with transplants because of Dr. Borel's discovery. Yet, scientists are still not sure how the cyclosporine works. Fungus might seem like an odd place to look for wonder drugs, but drug companies have learned that microorganisms in soil produce a wide range of medically interesting chemicals. Each year, they test some 30,000 samples to see whether a miracle drug might be hidden in one of them. So, although many scientists say that they believe there is no purpose or mind behind nature, they regularly look for purpose in the creation.
For a printed transcript of today's program, visit our website at creationmoments.com. And be sure to join us again next time for another Creation Moment, proclaiming evidence of God's truth.
Hi, my name is Dan.
And how old are you?
8.
And what do you like to do?
I like sports and engines and cars and drawing and dogs. Oh, and cars.
Dan also likes swing sets. Yeah, he could probably go pro someday in swing sets. Dan is also waiting for an adoptive family. He's in foster care, and I'm sure you'd agree, he deserves love like everyone else. So think about blessing a child by adopting from foster care.
And I like drawing cars, too.
Then visit iCareAboutOrphans.org to find encouragement and learn the next steps towards adoption. You'll also find ways to help orphans in your community. That's iCareAboutOrphans.org.
Kids like me are waiting.
You want to say the end?
Focus on the family, helping families thrive.
Learn more about adoption at the Wait No More Conference, Saturday, June 6th at Calvary Church, Mid Rivers Campus in St. Peter's. Wait No More, Finding Families for Missouri's Waiting Kids. Register for this free event at iCareAboutOrphans.org.
This is the Ask the Pastor Hour here on the Bible Study. I'm Chuck Rathert. Pastor Hank Simon is with us here today, pastor at Galilee Lutheran Church in Pasadena, Maryland. Our numbers are 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727 if you'd like to weigh in with a question or a comment. Going to change the subject here a little bit, Pastor. When you were holding forth here as a parish pastor in the Midwest, you were at Signal Hill Lutheran Church in Belleville, were you not?
Yes, sir.
And you did not have a Lutheran school, is that correct?
That's correct.
And does Galilee Lutheran Church have a Lutheran school?
We have a preschool.
You have a preschool.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have... it's my understanding, I don't know if this is correct or not, it's my understanding that the largest parochial school system in the United States is the Roman Catholic system, and it is followed by the Lutheran parochial system. Is that correct as far as you know?
I don't know. I know that there are a lot of independent Christian schools, and they have their own association, but they would not be tied to a denomination. So I think if you're saying, you know, related to one church body, that's probably right.
So did you have in some way a connection to a Lutheran school in your long pastoral career?
Well, when I started out as a part-time associate pastor for my first 3 years, I was at Marcus Lutheran Church, which doesn't exist anymore on the north side of St. Louis, and they had a Lutheran school, and then there was a consolidated Lutheran school during those years. At Signal Hill, we had an arrangement where we helped with tuition for children to go to Zion Lutheran School, which is on the other end of Belleville, about 7 miles away. So we typically had families who wanted to have their kids having a Lutheran grade school education go there.
Well, at my church, we have a Lutheran school, and all three of my children went through the Lutheran school at my church, all 9 years or whatever it was. And, you know, it has the Lutheran school has its own character, it has its own niche, and I think for many people it constitutes an option, and people exercise that option for different reasons. But there are a couple of stories that have popped up in the news today. I want to try to put them together and then see if I can get an evaluation from you as we consider these. The first comes out of Alameda County, California. This actually goes back to last week. And the story says, the intolerance against those with religious or traditional moral views is reaching new lows, and it is nowhere clearer than in Alameda. On Tuesday evening, the school board in the Bay City area, or Bay Area City, I guess I should say, voted 3-2 to approve curriculum promoting homosexuality to kindergartners, despite vehement and overwhelming opposition from the community. Promoters of the curriculum are so bent on indoctrinating students that they refused a parental opt-out provision, even though parents plead for the board to respect their right to protect their children. Here's a quote from Karen England, executive director of, the Capital Resource Institute. Karen says, polling CRI conducted in the city found that over half of city residents opposed the curriculum. Even many of those who did support the curriculum still favored the parental opt-out. England was present at the last three meetings of the school board after parents contacted CRI's office and asked for help in stopping the curriculum's adoption. A veteran of advocating for parental rights at the school board level, England testified on behalf of parents at two of the three meetings. Now here's a story out of Columbia, South Carolina. And this story says, in 2004, Brigadier General T.C. Pinckney, retired United States Air Force and former second vice president of the Southern Baptist Convention, and Dr. Bruce Short, Houston attorney, opened a debate over education by submitting a resolution to the annual meeting of the Southern Baptist Convention urging Baptists to remove their children from government schools and instead give them a Christian education. Although the Pinckney-Short resolution was met with howls of, the word is execration. I've never seen that word before.
Do you want me to look up in the dictionary while you're reading?
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I suppose you could do that. It was met with howls of execration from many Christian leaders, and the resolution's committee prevented it from being voted on by the annual meeting. The resolution initiated an important debate over education, both inside and outside the Southern Baptist Convention. Now, the SBC has come full circle. In an article that recently appeared in the Baptist Messenger, Dr. Morris H. Chapman, president and chief executive officer of the Southern Baptist Convention's executive committee, called for churches to provide many more Christian elementary and secondary schools as alternatives to the government's schools. Is this a blip on the radar screen, Pastor, or do you think we've tapped into a trend?
Well, first let me tell you what execration means.
I can't wait. When I first
saw
it,
call down evil upon, to curse, to loathe, to detest, to abhor.
Oh, my. So it's a very, very direct term.
Yeah. I guess it's sort of suitable. Maybe the person who used it thought that it was humorous because it talks about the sacred. To use it when reporting on a Baptist convention. I think there's a couple of things going on. One thing is that when you have school districts who do not meet the expectations of the parents, those who are able will consider alternatives, whether it's homeschooling, which has just really boomed in the last decade or so, or private schools, or Christian schools. Sometimes you have Christian schools that grow because the perception is that the public school system in which a family lives is not doing as good a job as it could. But you also have things like you're talking about the California school district, where if homosexual behavior as an accepted practice is part of the curriculum, I think you're going to have parents pulling their kids out and looking for other options. Having said that, the other trend which is going on is that, at least in these couple of years, because of the economy and the recession, there are some Christian schools, and including some Lutheran schools, that are really struggling. And we were told that at our Southeastern District Convention by one of the representatives of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. In fact, there's a middle school, high school combination north of Baltimore, Hartford Lutheran School, that just couldn't make it financially, and after a valiant effort, is shutting its doors, this spring, because it just couldn't financially sustain itself. So you have a number of things going on, Chuck. But I think that if you're going to have activists who want to push a gay and lesbian agenda, they're going to be pushing some people into alternative education, and some of that might well be a Lutheran school.
Well, is that something that parochial school educators everywhere should be exploring and anticipating, or are we better just to see how it plays out and then react to whatever happens?
I don't know enough about Lutheran education to give you a knowledgeable answer. I can give you my opinion.
All right. That's pretty much what I'm asking for.
Good. As long as it's understood that that's what I'm doing. I think it depends on the situation. To give quality education, a quality Lutheran education, can be really, really expensive. And that's a problem which Lutheran education has wrestled with in the last number of years. And it's been going on for the past decades. I have a relative who was a Lutheran school teacher, and one of the places at which this person taught, the salary was so low that this relative was eligible for food stamps. And I mentioned that to the school board president at the congregation, and the school board president forbid my relative to ask for food stamps because it would be too embarrassing to the congregation. Education is expensive, and especially now with all the things that people expect their kids to have in grade school, you can be easily talking about doubling a congregation's budget to provide Christian education. And so I think that's the financial aspect of it, and especially in these times, is really daunting. And that's, I think, why some families, we've got one family that homeschools here. And then some of their children have gone to a private Christian, typically they're called academies, and they're often run by Baptist churches, and they have very, very small classes, maybe three or four kids on a grade level. And it requires a lot of sacrifice by parents, and a lot of a real focus and a real commitment by a congregation to offer that sort of ministry. And some churches see that as their calling, and they do it. I think that it depends too on what level you're talking about. For instance, we this past year we had 83 students in our preschool in the various classes. Five of those are members of our congregation. About 30 of them do not list any current church home, and so we have been really active in trying to invite them to come to worship here, to come to Sunday school, to come to Vacation Bible School, and to reach out and to them so that they know that this is a place where they can learn more about Jesus.
So let me see if I, as I say, we're just exploring this, and mm-hmm. I appreciate your willingness to share an opinion. What you just described there sounds to me like just when people are going to start coming out of public education looking for a private education, that matches their preferences, and for many that will be their Christian preferences.
Mm-hmm.
It sounds like the way things are evolving, church bodies are going to be getting out of the education business. That's unfortunate.
I agree. I think there also, however, we also need when you know the word crisis. This is an old preacher's illustration, but the word crisis, when it's written in the characters that are used in Chinese, I don't know if it's Mandarin or Cantonese or both, but when they express that, they use the symbol for danger and the symbol for opportunity. And so when you have a situation as we do now, I sometimes thinking out of the box is I think worth doing. When we were on vacation in January, we were down in Tampa, and we were at this park with our grandchildren, and there were these group of parents that were there with their kids, and the various age levels. There probably were 20 children, maybe 10 families, and some of them were meeting in one area and some were meeting in another, and the park was next to a library, and then they went into the library when that opened. And it turned out, and I didn't ask anybody, but I could tell from what they were doing and listening and also their bumper stickers that this was a group of Catholic homeschoolers, and they had gotten together, and they were giving their children a Christian education without having to worry about a building and the costs of that, without having to worry about staff. They were doing it themselves, and they were working together with that. Now, that strikes me as one kind of creative model. They wanted their kids to have a conservative Catholic education, so that's how they were doing it. You know, maybe there are Lutheran parents who want to do the same sort of thing. Because when you get into the institution of the supporting of a school, as you probably very well know from Trinity and Edwardsville, that can be very expensive.
Oh, yeah. And the benefits are the expensive part.
Yeah.
As you want to treat your, as you pointed out, it's important to treat your workers well.
Yeah.
But that is where much of the increased expense is.
Sure.
So I guess.
And that's going to happen with smaller congregations with pastors, too, if health insurance keeps on going up. I know some who are just priced out of the market, to use those kind of terminology, and they can't afford a full-time pastor because they can't provide the health insurance.
What if I were to make this argument? Let's get your reaction to this. The trend that I have just described here, using these two stories, one from Columbia, South Carolina, and the Southern Baptist Convention, the other from Alameda County, California, and where the community does not seem to be able to influence the school board, there is a difference between being proactive and reactive. What we're talking about here is a situation that's emerging where some parents may want to take their kids out of public school because they are reacting to the morality that's being advanced in that public education setting, particularly perhaps the homosexual agenda, and they don't want their children to be influenced by that, so they react by taking them out. In reacting by taking them out, that means they're in the marketplace looking for private education which matches their preference. We compare that to a generation or two ago in the parochial school system, whether it's Roman Catholic or whether it's Lutheran or whatever it is, where you had a fairly large group of like-minded people who shared the same confessional identity, whatever it is, and said, you know, we want to pass that on to our children, so we're going to have a school. That's a proactive approach as opposed to a reactive approach. Therefore, it is illogical to conclude that the reactive situation that I just described based on these two stories is going to somehow have a positive impact on what was otherwise a proactive system down through the decades. Am I making sense here? And therefore, it's not going to work.
Well, I guess I would say yes and no. For one thing, and I need full disclosure here, I'm a parochial school graduate, kindergarten through my last year of seminary. So I was, the only time I've ever gone to public school, quote unquote, was when I took a couple of graduate courses when I was on my vicarage. I was in a campus ministry situation. Originally, if I understand it correctly, Lutheran schools and Catholic schools came out of a very much similar kind of setting in the fact that they wanted the values and the teachings of the church to be passed on to the children, and this was the best way to do it. And I'm guessing, as far as Lutheran schools go, that there might not even have been Sunday school at that point when, for instance, in this country, in the 1800s, Lutheran schools were started, because I think Sunday schools came in a little bit later. And so this was the primary way in which children were instructed in the teachings of the Christian faith. As then those kept on, you know, going, and then people knew that they would be good schools, and they were able to support them. As finances changed, as taxes got higher, that became a concern for some people. I can remember congregations wrestling over whether members should be able to come free and not have to pay any tuition, because non-members had to pay tuition, and my folks had to pay tuition for me to go to a Lutheran school because it wasn't run by our congregation. You had then the development of when the public school system was still very much lined up with Judeo-Christian ethics, you had congregations develop supplementary ways for those students to be able to get the Christian instruction. You had the midweek programs, like on Wednesday afternoons and evenings. You had Vacation Bible School. You had Sunday school. I think some of that now has changed because of the kind of thing that you were talking about out in California with the pro-homosexual morality agenda coming in. And I'm not sure if I'm answering your question or not now that I think about this, but let me finish my thought. I don't know that you're going to find... I think that running a school now, compared to, say, 50 years ago, is a whole lot more expensive. And people will have to put that at the absolute top of their priority list to do it. And I guess that's the question. Do they see what's that as being so valuable that they're willing to do that? I know the older generation did. I remember hearing from one of the pastors at Zion that he in Belleville that this pastor was told by an older member. He said, if the school ever closes here, we should shut down the congregation, because that's why the church exists. Which was an interesting feeling, but that's what this veteran member felt.
Yeah. Let's take a telephone call, 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Hi, Leo. You're on the Bible study.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning.
As a member of Resurrection Lutheran at the time, Alan Erdman asked me to serve on the board at Green Park Elementary, and then he wound up wearing my daughter. She's now living in Maryland at Huntingtown. Her husband's a pilot out of Andrews Air Force Base. They have two children. And I grew up in a family where my father was a public school superintendent for 35 years. One of the things he always suggested, and he was a Presbyterian elder, I should add, he thought it would be great if the public would support transportation for children going to parochial schools, because the parents are paying taxes and all this. And when I was over at Green Park, I introduced this idea, and I did it at one meeting because they were all upset about the cost of doing this and timing the early morning journeys and returning the children home in the later part of the day. And I think this would be a great idea. I'd love to support it. I don't see why we couldn't do that, or at least afford an opportunity for the schools, you know, to work out a transportation arrangement. This is a costly thing, to say nothing of the impoverished teachers. And I'll get off the phone.
All right.
But thank you for what you're saying.
See what Pastor has to say. Thanks for the call.
I think there are some states where that happens, but my memory is foggy on where I've either read about that or seen it, that parochial school students are able to get public school transportation. But as I think about it, I think Wisconsin does that. I think that if they're in the, you know, within certain limitations, they are able to ride the public school buses.
Well, it seems to me, just looking at these two stories, that if we can kind of crystal ball this, I mean, one of the paragraphs here in the Southern Baptist Convention story says, despite the Pinckney Short Resolution's hostile reception, which we talked about earlier, all the way back in 2005, Dr. Albert Mohler, who is a fairly nationally recognized figure, president of the Southern Baptist Convention's flagship seminary, Southern Theological Seminary, called for SBC to develop an exit strategy from the government schools. Since then, other Christian leaders have endorsed, in part or in whole, the call to provide Christian children with a Christian education. That goes, that's 4 years ago already. So this is not just a new thing. And as I said, if we put a crystal ball to this, I think certainly people who live in school districts where this is more problematic than others could position themselves to be ready for this outcome.
Yeah, yeah. And if you know, and there are other things that can be done too. If a congregation, sometimes congregations can get together to do a school. Sometimes congregations can do what Signal Hill did, which was providing some tuition support for students at another Lutheran school. You could have, if you have a group of parents who want to pull their, because of what's going on in the public schools, and feel that they can provide an adequate education through homeschooling, and you support them, say with the use of facilities or in other ways, maybe you don't have a school but you have a gym, let them use that for, you know, there are ways in which thinking outside the box, outside of that we have to put up a building with a gym and a cafeteria and six classrooms and teacher's lounge and, you know, all this kind of stuff. There are other ways in which the goal can be accomplished, and maybe that's part of what's going on here too, Chuck.
Well, I'm not smart enough to figure out what the direction is, but I hope somebody's working on it somewhere, because I do know this. I think for the future of our country, having that option, that parochial option, so that the ethics and the morality, the values, and the faith can be transferred in the school setting is absolutely vital. That's my opinion.
Well, and I agree that the church needs to be on top of this and doing what it can in trying to think creatively, so that parents can be supported in having their children raised in a setting where the Christian faith is not ridiculed, and behavior and morality, which Christians consider bad and poor, is not promoted.
All the signs indicate, Pastor, that this is not going to get better soon. This is going to get worse.
Well, I'm afraid that you're right with that, Chuck. I think you're a fairly astute observer of the times, from what I hear when I listen to you, and I think that this is just the start.
Pastor Simon, Pastor Hank Simon, thanks for thinking this through with us and helping us understand what we read.
You're most welcome, sir.
Pastor Hank Simon, pastor at Galilee Lutheran Church in Pasadena, Maryland. Tomorrow, Pastor Tim Ostermeyer will be here for the final verses of Philippians 4.
Listen to Chuck Rather and guests Monday through Friday at the same time on The Bible Study. The Bible Study is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is needed for The Bible Study to continue. Our address is 85 Founders Lane, St. Louis, Missouri, 63105. You can contact us on the Internet at kfuo.org. For a free copy of The Bible Study, please visit the audio archive section of our homepage. That's kfuo.org. The Bible Study is a broadcast service of Worldwide KFUO.